democratic voter in control of the political system. This is because planning will inevitably replace laissez-faire in the relationship between government and business. This planning may not be single or unified, but it will be planning in which the mainframe work and operational forces of the economic system will be established and limited by the experts on the governmental side, and then the experts on the economic side will do their planning within these established limits. And so what Carol Quigley is saying is that by the 21st century, we are going to be living in a planned society controlled by the experts. Now, look back, now that we're in the 21st century, has not that occurred? It has, just as he said was going to happen. But of course, he had access to the records of what they were intending to do. But it actually gets worse. Back in 1965, the Department of Health and Education and Welfare, HEW, sponsored a study to define how they're going to get from where they were then in 1965 to where we are now in the 21st century. They came out with a report in 1969 called the Behavioral Science Teacher Education Program that's now fully integrated within our educational program. And this is what they said, and I want to have you hang on to your hats because you will not believe what they planned to do back in 1965-69 and what is happening actually today. He said, calculations of the future and how to modify it are no longer considered to be an obscure academic pursuit. Long-range planning and implementation of plans will be made by a technological scientific elite. This will strain the democratic fabric to the ripping point. The Protestant ethic will atrophy as more and more enjoyed a varied, leisured, and guaranteed sustenance. Work as a means to and an end of living will diminish. Most people will tend to be hedonistic, and a dominant elite will provide the bread and circuses to keep social dissension and disruption to at a minimum. A small elite will carry society's burdens. The resulting impersonal manipulation of most people's lifestyles will be softened by provision for pleasure-seeking and guaranteed physical necessities. The controlling elite will engage in power plays largely without the involvement of most of the people. And that is so true today. Most people have no idea what's going on in the international arena, have none. Almost all of this is being done in secrecy. Going on with this report, the society will be a leisurely one. People will study, play, and travel. Some will be in various stages of the drug-induced experiences. Each individual will receive at birth a multi-purpose identification, which will have, amongst other things, extensive communications and control uses. Each individual will be saturated with ideas of information. Each will be self-selected. Other kinds will be imposed overtly by those who assume the responsibility for the other's actions. Relatively few individuals will be able to maintain control over their opinions. Most will be pawns of competing opinion molders. It's amazing how back in the 1960s they began the process of getting us to where we are right now. If you look at society today, almost every one of the characteristics that I've read have come true. We are living in a planned society. We are living focused on leisure and recreation. We live in a drug-induced society. All of the things that they talked about in the 1960s have become a reality by the 21st century.
Aiming the night at the Bill of Rights, right cross to your I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
And good morning, CKLN listeners. It is the ninth day of January 2011. You are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. Special thanks to Mr. Ron Nelson, legendary Ron Nelson here. Hopefully you enjoyed him spinning his unique brand of soul. He's been putting it down on the streets of T-Dot for several years now and is still young and good-looking, but definitely put enough time in the game to deserve respect out there for building up what is now an internationally renowned, for helping to build up what is now an internationally renowned Toronto hip-hop and urban music scene and environment here. So special thanks to Mr. Ron Nelson for filling in for the First Ladies of Reggae. They'll be back shortly, as far as I know. Now, this morning on CKLN's Rude Awakening, I'm on my way in here. I'm trying to figure out, what to talk about. What's the latest thing? What's the hottest thing? And there's a million things out there that can draw our attention. But we are encouraged to be in this culture, as the clip from Michael Kaufman revealed. We're encouraged to be distracted by technology and to be living in a world where we're like birds. Just imagine the life of a bird. A bird flies around all day, tries to peck at shiny, pretty things, and finds a red berry and a green berry and maybe a blueberry, and then calls it a day and goes, wow, that was neat, and then goes the next day. And that's a lot like us looking for new sources of entertainment, new sources of fulfillment, new twits on Twitter, a little text messaging updates. And each of us surfs a dozen different websites a day, or maybe double or triple that. And then when we try and get together, we often don't have a shared understanding for us to build upon. We can certainly inform each other and recycle trivia, but there isn't as much collective understanding as we need to take action on the big things that we need to take action on, which includes the info war. In an era where there are shadow government forces that are manipulating events, for those of you folks out there who don't know who are just joining us for the first time, or for those of you folks who want to hear it again, this is your host BK, aka VJ, here on CKLN's Rude Awakening on Mondays and Thursdays, and I do try and break down the new world order. Essentially, the working thesis is, as far as we know, at all times in history, there have been ruling forces out there who have been influencing the cultures.
Basically the biggest story of my career, launching me to a level I've never known before, or saving the woman I used to have familial relations with. This is hard! It's me, Papa Burgundy, all right?
Damn straight. And so through all ages, there's always been kings or queens or dictators or tyrants. There's been somebody out there who has had a vested interest in controlling the people that live there. Like King England, King of France, King of Siam, whatever, tribal leaders in different parts of the world. They wanted to make sure that they influenced people to make sure those people didn't rebel. You couldn't work them too hard because then you might kill them, and you couldn't give them too much hope because then they might hope for better, but you couldn't give them too little because then they might not bother working at all. They may lose so much hope that they don't produce anything for you to make you richer and make you and your family more secure at the top. And so this has been something that they wrestled with, and they tried to figure this out. And back in the Egyptian Empire, the Pharaoh worried about this. And in the Roman Empire, the Romans and the Roman Senate worried about this. In the British Empire, they worried about this. And in France, they had the French Revolution, where they stormed the Bastille, and they took many of the French nobility to the guillotines and chopped off their heads for mistreating the population. Although, in fact, that was also a staged revolution by more powerful people behind the scenes who were trying to overthrow competitors, basically. But the point is that rulers out there always know there is a chance for the people out there to rebel, especially if they are given more power and opportunity. And at this time in history here, 9 days into the 11th year, into the 21st century, we have a phenomenal amount of power that we can use to get on the same page about things we need to be on the same page about. You know, you can like pistachio ice cream, he or she could like chocolate, and a third party could like vanilla or tiger tail or butterscotch. That doesn't matter. But if you can agree that it's important for people in a given city, philosophically, on principle, to try and prevent each other from being poisoned, then perhaps you can pass on some information that can help expedite that process. Where you say, you know what, we've all heard bits and pieces about, you know, this, that, aspartame, MSG, fluoride, whatever. I'm going to do something definitive for the people where I live that's a bit more researched on behalf of people that don't have the time.
Sitting here in my Aquajet 9000 enjoying, my usual meal of steak, waffles, french fries, and of course scotch. Now, if you don't think this song is the greatest song ever, I will fight you. That's no lie.
Yeah. And we're given so much entertainment out there to enjoy. And this entertainment is part of a plan to scientifically indoctrinate us. Now, I got no problem with it. Except for the fact that, you know, it's not good for us unless it's like, all right, check this out. Imagine if you can eat, you know, what you want, or not what you want all the time, but you can certainly indulge in your tastes, but you can still be in good shape. You can still be physically fit, capable, you know, lacking in health problems. And yet, you know, you still have a burger once in a while, a burger with bacon and cheese, you have some ice cream, you have some, you know, whatever, you smoke a cigar, you smoke cigarettes or whatever. And that's exactly how our addiction to our entertainment works, where if we can prove that we can get active in the info war and start notifying people around us of critical things about the system they need to be aware of, or that you think they need to be aware of, and you're doing it from the right place, and you're doing it from a place where you actually genuinely want to help people, then you can keep your pop culture. But if you can't, then your pop culture will eventually destroy you. It'll make you too weak to deal properly with the world. And the system itself is changing. We are in an era of crisis, an era of change. And nothing epitomizes that more than what happened recently in the Arizona shooting of a congresswoman out there, a Democratic congresswoman in Arizona, because essentially what's happening is, I don't know if this is real, I don't know if this is not real, in the sense of it being engineered or staged, or if the guy was coached, or you know, who knows, but I do know this: the establishment who wants to come after our guns, because they want to disarm us, because disarmed populations are easier to control and can basically never fight back, because they don't have the means against the state, which has a monopoly on power and force. So they want to disarm the Americans, they want to disarm Canadians, they want to disarm people worldwide and have them all subject to the whims of the state. And they also want to crack down on the internet and on free speech. And they want to create a climate of fear and suspicion around anybody who decides to challenge the system. So, for example, if you think it's hard to talk to people now about the New World Order, the forces behind globalization, who are pushing for a globally standardized culture and permanent scientific dictatorship, imagine how hard it's going to be after a couple more of these. And if you think politicians are inaccessible now, imagine the excuses that they'll have to wall themselves off even further from the public based on this. And so, to give you an idea, the New York Times, the paper of record, the New York Times is one to talk about rhetoric and violence, from Kurt Nimmo at Infowars.com. Let's see what Mr. Nimmo, one of the Infowars.com writers, has to say about this. You've all heard about this. If you haven't heard about this story, a couple of days ago, or on the weekend rather, Democratic congresswoman, was shot in Arizona. She was someone who supported Obama's health care legislation, which was really written by the insurance companies. That's why all their stock prices went up right after it was signed. And supported weak border laws and more rights for immigrants there, which is fine, except for the fact that they are being used to lower wages of other people in Arizona and the United States, as similar programs run by the New World Order are around the world. So no matter what you do, if you just try and make moves within this system, you will eventually get caught up in some form of enslavement that is designed by the choices that we are given. So we have to understand the system, and we have to explain things. As opposed to taking a left or right political position, explain how they're both BS. Some people won't get it, but at this point, more and more people will. So from Kurt Nimmo, January 10th, 2011. January 10th? Yeah, it is January 10th. What do you know? It is the 10th day of January 2011. So Bill Anderson has posted an on-target post about the situation in Arizona. He's critical of a government-worshipping editorial published by the New York Times, blaming in part libertarians for the carnage. Quote, "Yes, the paper has editorialized that anyone who might not have the same view that government is the holy mother of our existence is at fault for the shooting," he writes. "I can't read the Gray Lady's op-ed because I'm not a subscribing member, but according to Anderson, the New York Times believes, quote, "it is legitimate to hold Republicans, and particularly their most virulent supporters in the media, responsible for the gala of anger that has produced the vast majority of these threats, or setting the nation on edge. Many on the right have exploited the arguments of division, reaping political power by demonizing immigrants or welfare recipients or bureaucrats. They seem to have persuaded many Americans that the government is not just misguided, but the enemy of the people." And again, this is the problem, is that when people on the left hear about this, it's going to reinforce the stereotypes about the right, and it will make them more entrenched into their left-wing belief system and more entrenched into believing the government can protect them and that people should be disarmed and that the government, you know, they might be evil, but they're certainly the lesser of the two evils, without actually understanding the left-right paradigm and thus how evil they are. He continues, "While I think it is a joke to think that Republicans actually believe government is the problem, nonetheless, the editorialists were targeting those of us who believe that government that is not accountable for the violence it imposes on everyone else is a bad thing. Will Grigg has noted that time and again the government agents would kill innocent people, yet neither are prosecuted nor disciplined for what is outright murder. The man who committed these horrendous crimes will be in prison for the rest of his life. However, the people who have massacred hundreds of innocent people but wore the proper government costume while doing it will not spend even a second being inconvenienced. Those of us who point out this fact, according to the New York Times, are, quote, enemies of the people." And this is true. Indicting the government for their violence is sort of out of style. It's falling out of style in our culture, and so we've got to bring that back in style. If you believe in karma, it's a good idea. And you have to understand here that we are all in the same boat. If you blamed our cops, for example, here in Toronto, Canada, for what happened at the G20 summit this past summer, understand that they were basically brainwashed into locking down the city and the downtown core like a giant prison, and harassing, you know, Canadians and violating our rights. So that was their brainwashing. Our brainwashing is not doing anything about it. That's our brainwashing. You know, once the martial law period itself is over, and I was fairly active this summer trying to get the word out about how this is all BS and staged and we're all getting played and we're all supposed to be pitted against each other in a giant divide and conquer strategy by the elite. I was out there and trying to put that down, but I made a point on some of what I wrote. I made basically said, look, guys out there, men, especially age 25 to 45, who are, you know, young enough to do better and old enough to know better, should be handling this stuff on behalf of women, children, and the elderly. And I basically said, look, if you don't want to do anything during martial law, I understand. It's, you know, we're not generally built to handle this, and we don't know it, and we don't know what we can and can't do, without getting shot or arrested and whatnot. But after martial law, if it happens again, we are going to get blamed for it. So guys definitely got to step up out there. And not exactly sure. I've been struggling basically since October to try and, you know, where I kind of hit a wall during the campaign. I was hitting the streets. I was flyering. I was trying to poster. But then The state here in Toronto, the people getting ripping down my posters. I'm talking about lots of them. Like, I was postering like crazy, and I go back and I'd see all the other posters for the bands and the assorted nightclubs and whatnot out there and up there. I'd see mine specifically ripped down. I'd see posters older than mine, little small mini posters older than mine and so on that were still up, and mine would be specifically targeted. So I switched to flyering. But this is where it's going, folks, and the Department of Homeland Security in the U.S. and the FBI are introducing their own flyers, which they are putting in stores in certain states in the U.S. So they're basically advocating flyering for their message, and I'm advocating flyering for our message of freedom against that message of fascism and tyranny. And if you think we're safe here in Canada, think again. Thanks to the sequel to NAFTA, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and other bilateral agreements for security and border security and trade and policy between America and Canada, and many between America, Canada, and Mexico to create an EU-style federation, we are going to get the same policies here. We might get them a little slower because our culture's a little different, but the standardization of policies across North America means all the crappy stuff you see happening in the U.S. will eventually happen here. And you can't just, I've been saying this for years, you can't just sit on your front lawn, crack open a six-pack, and laugh about your neighbor's house catching on fire. Because if you don't help stop it, eventually your house will catch on fire too, and it will burn down. And so, us Canadians here smugly cracking open a Molson Canadian, trying to think that we're going to be okay in this, it is a mistake. And I'm going to take you to Max Kaiser with Nicole Foss on the economy to back me up a little bit on this, because Mr. Kaiser is a financial analyst, American, based in Paris, France. Nicole Foss is a blogger here in Canada. And Canadians think that we are going to survive this recession scot-free, and I'm here to tell you, it may not be true. Let's go to Mr. Kaiser and Ms. Nicole Foss to throw a little jolt in us so that we get an idea that, you know, with the limiting of currency worldwide, there's less monopoly money for us to play with. And so paying off our 25-year mortgages may get more difficult, especially if you add in inflation. But Max Kaiser from the Max Kaiser Report and Canadian Nicole Foss on the Canadian economy.
And they did not have the kind of problems that other banks around the world have had during this subprime meltdown. You know, they had a big reform movement not too long ago, and I guess this set the stage for having a lot better sound policies in place. Are these banks as bulletproof as we are led to believe?
Not at all. I mean, there are not that many of them. There has been a lot of consolidation, but they're not that many. They're not highly liquid. And although we didn't have subprime in the same way they did in America, sort of lending $500,000 to Walmart greeters to buy enormous houses, we didn't have that, but we did have 40-year mortgages with no down payment. These were the people who were driving marginal prices in red-hot markets like Vancouver. Even now, although we don't have that anymore, we have 35-year mortgages with 5% down, which is still a pretty extreme situation from the point of view of offering credit. The average house price in Vancouver is over $1 million, so basically when that bubble burst, that is going to have tremendous consequences for the Canadian banking system.
Okay, so this housing market in Canada is still, at the moment, you could characterize it as being on the upswing.
It's peaking at the moment,
okay,
I would argue.
You're saying this Canadian housing market is peaking.
Mm-hmm.
And in spots like Vancouver with million-dollar shacks, clearly, and the mania, you see signs of the mania. People in Canada watching this right now are coughing up a lung. They're saying, how dare you suggest that this market's in a bubble? Don't you understand we're Canadian? And the kind of mentality you see, this is what I gathered. Are you noticing this as well, this kind
Absolutely.
Of entrenched mentality?
Absolutely. This is the psychology of a bubble. When you're in a bubble, you can't see it for what it is. So I find talking to people about real estate in Canada is like talking to Americans in 2006. There's this tremendous sense of denial. And in Canada, there's this real sense that we're special, we're an energy superpower, our banks are fine, these are other people's problems. And I'm telling you, they're absolutely not other people's problems. We just haven't seen them yet. Our economy held up longer than the U.S., partly because the Canadian dollar, petrocurrency, and so we had a lot of support from the oil industry into the end of 2008. But nevertheless, we are in a massive bubble right now, and there is going to be an enormous comeuppance. Canadians are terribly in debt, more so than anyone else in the world, really, in terms of level of personal debt. People pay 50% of their income on average for mortgage costs. In places like Vancouver, it would be 70%. That is a very substantial fraction of income. And this is absolutely a bubble, not just in red-hot places like Vancouver, but, I mean, St. John's, Newfoundland, where there's the oil industry offshore, or Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. These are places that never had any money at all, but the prices have absolutely skyrocketed. They've just seen parabolic increases, and this is absolutely characteristic of a bubble.
Now, the banks, it seems, let me get your take on this. It seems that because the banking system in Canada, it did go through a crisis recently, and they reformed the system. They did offer a lot of consolidation. There's really a monopoly in the Canadian banking system. They're allowed to, for example, it's not very competitive, so the fees one isn't charged in the Canadian banking system are quite high, and this gives them a pretty strong revenue base. But so what I'm getting from you is that the global real estate meltdown, it's deferred in Canada. They didn't escape it. It's just yes. Been deferred.
Yeah, we are going to be playing catch up to the downside in the fairly near future, I would think. And what we've already seen in the United States and a lot of parts of Europe, most notably Ireland, these dynamics are absolutely coming to Canada. It's just a question of when. I don't think it will be that long. The banking system, apart from its exposure to real estate, and there's also a tremendous commercial real estate problem. Commercial real estate, we haven't seen that fall even in the United States yet. It is absolutely coming. Canadian banks have also acted as reinsurers for in the derivatives market for a number of extremely risky things. So I think we're going to see that in a number of cases, the buck stops with a Canadian bank, and we haven't seen the collapse that is coming in the derivatives market yet. We're still in the extend and percent phase where we haven't seen price discovery and mark to market. It is coming, and when it does, it is going to knock out the sports from under Canadian banks just as much as it will other banks.
Okay, so by, let's say, peak to trough, Canadian real estate, top to bottom, what's your prognosis there? How much of a collapse are you talking about?
Well, I imagine real estate falling, and people will think this is extreme, by about 90% on average, which is a very large number.
I do that for cutaway shots later. In post-production, you see me doing this a lot. You give, you know, it's a cheap effect, I guess. You see, it's all very exciting. So, a 90%.
Yes, 90%, the way you get to a 90% fall in real estate prices is imagine a credit collapse, which is where we're going. We're moving to a deflationary credit collapse. So your pool of buyers ends up being the people who can buy a property for cash, do not need to borrow money to do this, and who choose to use incredibly scarce cash for that purpose at that time. That pool of buyers will be extremely small, and so you can get enormous price collapses when you simply undercut price support at anything remotely like current levels.
Okay, so the only holdout so far in this global real estate nightmare, you've got Canada, I guess Australia is still, you know, frothy, much to Steve Keen's consternation. But, okay, Canada, the other, is the banking system, is the economy as reliant on the, all that, what Dr. Michael Hudson calls the fire economy, finance, insurance, and real estate. Is a lot of the GDP based on all of the services and all the financing and all of that coming into it? So we see that whole domino effect. Once the real estate prices start to collapse, you see all the jobs in the mortgage service area, the real estate, all this. It's a big domino thing. This is yet to come, and it's a similar situation, and we're going to see it in Canada.
Absolutely. 20% of GDP is to do with home construction.
20% of GDP home construction.
I don't have the figures in my head for
it's
insurance
a big swack.
And financial services, but
right.
It is going to be absolutely massive. And this is a huge overexposure to the very things that are at the center of this financial crisis. So absolutely Canada is going to suffer in the same way that everybody else does with the collapse of finance and insurance and real estate. We do have a fairly large manufacturing economy, but everything we manufacture, 80% of everything we manufacture, we sell to America.
Right.
So when Americans can no longer afford to buy our goods, our manufacturing sector is going to take a massive hit, as we've already seen with the auto industry, and that is not finished yet, by the way. This is still in the fairly early stages of collapse.
Okay. Canadian dollar supported in large part due to oil. You know, you refer to it just as a petrocurrency. And we've got huge oil reserves in the form of the tar sands or oil sands around that Alberta, I guess, is concentrated in that area. A couple of questions. Number one, Is it cost effective? And is the loss of the U.S. export market a negative? And is this going to be enough to offset all the other economic problems? And therefore, is the Canadian dollar, is it also vulnerable?
The Canadian dollar is going to be vulnerable for a couple of reasons. The U.S. dollar should show significant strength on the deflation of dollar-denominated debt, which will create demand for dollars. So I think as the U.S. dollar shows significant strength, the Canadian dollar will weaken in comparison, partly because of the dynamics for the U.S. dollar, but also because of a fall in oil prices. I mean, you mentioned tar sands. Tar sands are essentially an arbitrage between a gaseous fuel, natural gas, and a liquid fuel in the form of Syncrude. There's very little net energy gain in doing that. You put in almost as much energy as you get out.
Syncrude is what? Synthetic crude?
Synthetic crude oil, yes.
But so it's turns crude oil. It comes from the... what is it exactly? Tar sands is...
It's tar surrounding sand grains, but you have to put a lot of energy in to melt it, to separate it from the sand grains.
Okay, so instead of a well that I'm drilling through rock and I find a reservoir of oil that I suck up, I've got instead a geological formation, which is a lot of oil is just infused into the crust, basically. You don't go and pull it out. You've just got a kind of a swamp of rock and oil.
You can either, if you have a surface deposit, you can scoop it up and take it away that way and then melt the bitumen off the sand. Or if it's a deep deposit, you can actually pump the heat down and then pump the liquid oil up as you have melted it down there. So there are two different ways of doing it.
So this heating, that's a lot of energy.
Enormous amount of energy.
So the energy to heat it up and extract, you're saying,
is
neutral or negative.
Yeah, you get almost no more energy out than you put in.
Okay.
And natural gas is likely to be a more valuable fuel in the future anyway, because conventional natural gas peaked in 2001. So using enormous reserves of natural gas to turn it into energy into the form of Syncrude, I think is just completely ridiculous. And of course, you destroy Northern Alberta in the process, and you have an incredibly water-dependent process going on in a very water-constrained environment where...
And we're back, folks. I was Max Kaiser and Nicole Foss on the Canadian economy and a bit on the tar sands. I know there's been a lot of talk about that, so I thought I'd let that clip run a bit to break down a bit of that phenomena and whether or not we should drill in the tar sands in Alberta. But the bottom line is that we're gonna have less to work with in the future. Unless we decide to use what we have now, because the plan is for the billionaires out there, Prince Charles and Al Gore and all these other fake green billionaires, to tell all of us to use less while they steal the rest at gunpoint. The war on terror rapture takes our rights. The global warming rapture is meant to take our stuff. And this is the coldest January since 1985. So since when they announced global warming in March 2007, you got to ask why in the last 4 years it's been colder than ever. And yet the people there who talk about climate change will say, well, you know, these are aberrations. It still doesn't mean in 20 years that, you know, we won't be super warm unless we do something right now. And again, total BS that they're selling us when it comes to that. So, you know, keep that in mind. And keep in mind that we, you know, 90% of people are good in most, you know, environments and jobs. So for example, this morning I'm walking up from Union Station. I'm near the Eaton Center. I'm just passing Queen Street, and I'm about to jaywalk. And I see a cop car to my right coming towards me, and he slows down, but I'm going against the red, so I put my hand up and apologize briefly and back up, so that he can pass on his green. But it seemed like these officers in their car were going to let me jaywalk on a very cold January morning at you know, 5:50 a.m. And so you know there is some give and take, and there's been plenty of nice police officers who I've dealt with, including ones who ID'd me during the G20 martial law situation and did it in a very humane fashion while doing their job. So all we have to do is reach more people with the bigger explanation to try and get them to make incremental changes and question more of what they're being asked to do and understand it as part of the larger agenda. And there are fights going on all over the place on the inside, which we should get involved in. you know, in the info war, by putting info out there, by burning DVDs, by putting out flyers, by putting up posters, by passing on emails. Because that's just the first part. The first part is just the info war. It's just passing on information. The second part is a deeper understanding of the system, and working in that, working to slow down some of the horrendous policies that are being pushed at the international level and then implemented at local levels worldwide, mostly emanating from the United Nations. And then the third part is what do we do after that? How can we make an orderly transition from a new world order controlled society that looks like this to one that we control that looks like this and that gets better and better, and that's something that we can count on.
There's nothing you can't do.
And that's right, there is nothing you can't do in this environment. And yet, you know, I see it out there, and one of the reasons I make the point about guys and about men is that, men, if you love your woman, then she may accidentally turn you into a pet, because that's what happens. I just saw a multi-grain Cheerios commercial yesterday with a couple of goofy-looking British people, a goofy-looking British couple, and the guy goes to his woman and says, hey, honey, you're eating multi-grown Cheerios. You trying to lose weight? She's like, do I have to lose weight? And he goes, no, but they're really low in calories, and they're you know, five multi-grains, and they're, you know, they're really good for you. And then she says to him in the commercial, what else does it say on the back of that? And he says, it says, shut up, Steve, and she kind of smiles. And there's tons and tons of that those commercials out there just reinforcing this notion. And if you watch The Simpsons last night, you know, where Marge is hanging out with her female friends, and the four guys, the four husbands are hanging out together, having an absolutely miserable time. These things implant themselves into our subconscious. And we feel that this is what life is, because we get a hyper reality from television. And from the propaganda around us. And so, you know, that could happen. And yet we are being turned into a land of sexual predators and social editors. And a lot of people out there say, how do I find a relationship? You know, a buddy of mine was giving advice to another buddy of his who was like, geez, I can't find a good relationship. And buddy was saying, it's because you're always trying to get laid. And he just didn't understand that. He goes, what are you talking about? You know, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'll tell you what the difference is. If you're trying to get laid, then you're much more conservative in your approach, and in terms of how much you worry about upsetting somebody else and how you're trying to say the right things and so on and so forth. And that may get you laid, but you won't trust the person you're with to know you well enough, because you weren't you enough. And they won't trust you as well as you play that little game. And it's fine. You can play that game. It's all good. It is what it is. Do your thing. But if you want to find a relationship, then the best thing you can do is put more of yourself out there. And even if, you know, a very beautiful young lady or a very beautiful young man doesn't vibe with those intentions, it doesn't matter, because that person isn't the person you're supposed to be in a relationship with. So put more of yourself out there. Tons and tons of simple rules like this, you know. But here on Rude Awakening, I do want to make a couple of more points here to break down what's going on. Early cancer screening could cause millions of deaths, from Liberty Doctor, the Liberty Doctor, courtesy of Infowars.com. And this is what most people are jogging for and running for. All those people running for breast cancer charities and cancer.ca charities, where they themselves say that 40% of women and 45% of men, according to 2009 data, are likely to get cancer in Canada. And yet what we're mostly being sold to push for these days is early diagnosis, more screening, more radiation-filled mammograms that actually accelerate or cause breast cancer, according to many studies. And so to this article here from the Liberty Doctor. My early training was in biochemistry. I did several years of rotations through the department of MD Anderson that did human testing and development of new chemotherapeutic agents such as nucleoside analogs. This department is called developmental therapeutics. Part of our interdepartmental philosophy was to have brainstorming meetings with the premier researchers and clinicians from all over the world almost every day. One of the things that all of these fathers and mothers of the chemotherapeutic industry agreed upon was the, quote, cancer model. The model was essentially that cancer arises when cells get deranged by having their genetic programming changed in expression, covering and uncovering areas on the genes, or from actual mutation of the code and, in some cases, modification of the code by viruses. Most agreed that every man, woman, and child under this model would develop cancer somewhere in their bodies every year several times, but they normally go away. Fortunately, the most common thing that happens to a cell when it is modified is for it to die rather than losing its inhibition to grow greedily into its neighbors and stimulate capillaries to support it and become malignant. Most mutations are non-viable. In addition, our cells have very aggressive repair mechanisms that fix transcription errors on a genetic level. In the event that the error is not fixed and some cells do grow, the immune system recognizes the cells as foreign and kills them. My concern is that the early detection of cancer at the cellular level will have us aggressively looking for the location of these early cancers. The main tool for finding early cancer location when you don't know if it is in the lung, liver, colon, prostate, mouth, or wherever is full body scanning. If you check out background radiation experience and compare it to other radiation experience, you will find on Wikipedia, for example, that most of our exposure other than background is occupational or from medical testing and therapy. 75% of our exposure is from CAT scans. The scans themselves are the radiation that accelerates the cause of cancer. And so it's very likely the aggressive use of scanning technology will double or triple the incidence of radiation-caused cancers in the diagnostic patient's future. It is also likely that in cases the cancer cannot be found, it is occult, it is because it has already been destroyed by natural processes or has died on its own. People will be encouraged to undergo, quote, preventive regimes of chemotherapy, which also will cause a direct increase in other forms of cancer. Much more risk-benefit analysis needs to be done regarding what percentage of these, quote, early cancers are going to take root before we start looking for them with radiation or poisoning whole patients so we may kill a baby cancer. That's right. They're going to look for signs of cancer that your body could beat on its own in this model, which is why we have to resist it. And from the Globe and Mail here, going to break down. I saw a bit on the CBC as well last night, some coverage of this this rampage where Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords was shot. And they're talking about the radicalization of people and the radicalization through excessive criticism of the government or governments. And that includes people like myself. You know, I could get blamed if somebody takes one of my radio shows and acts on it according to the thought criminal legislation that has been passed and that that will probably be implemented soon. So from Conrad Jakubowski, in wake of gunman's rampage, America searches its soul. The mosaic of items laid by well-wishers outside the constituency office of Gabrielle Giffords includes a homemade sign on plain white Bristol board that is nearly obscured by countless candles, flowers, wreaths, and teddy bears. Quote, let us mourn together, the sign reads. Don't make this about politics. Republicans and Democrats deplore this kind of hatred and violence. They just happen to disagree profoundly about what causes it. The ghastly act of troubled 22-year-old may have no direct link to the ugly rhetoric, Tea Party tirades, Sarah Palin gun metaphors, or militia mind meld of recent American politics, but it has indubitably provided a catharsis that will haunt the collective discourse for a while to come. It's too early to know what may come from the violent killing of six civic-minded constituents and the grievous wounding of the earnest congresswoman that they had come to meet. For now, the targeting of Ms. Giffords, the antithesis of a hot-button politician, is just a cruel irony. And this is where it gets to bipartisan. We're being encouraged to support bipartisan thing, to tone down the rhetoric. The Jon Stewart Daily Show and Stephen Colbert rally was tone down the rhetoric. And it's true, the fake rhetoric on the fake left and the fake right, as sold by our mainstream media, from Barack Obama on the left to Sarah Palin on the right, is in fact inflammatory and designed to induce this process and induce a dissatisfaction with the political system as a whole. But the rhetoric of freedom and liberty and the anti-New World Order, anti-globalization rhetoric that we could engage in, where we calmly and consistently pass on information, not participate in protests, which turn into population control exercises where the state trains our police and military and other security forces to beat the hell out of us, but calmly and consistently sharing information with your neighbors is something that can transcend this. And if it's difficult for us to talk about, because, you know, in many cases, we don't like talking about this. In fact, what we can do is we can simply pass on information and ensure that people have a chance to digest it on their own times. But I'm getting a phone call coming in, so I'm going to take this phone call here on air, and we'll all figure out what this caller wants. Good morning, CKLN. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
I was just responding to the person on the air right now.
That would be me, ma'am.
Aren't you talking?
I am talking to you. We are on the air.
Okay.
What's your point?
You were talking. I have a cold. You were talking about radiation.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, my dentist has practiced for many years, and he included and wrote that my teeth are as they are because of over radiation, and a lot of people are not aware of that. They've had so much radiation. I've had radiation since I had encephalitis at age 5. My name is Carmen, by the way.
Hello, Carmen.
Yeah.
Well, now, thank you for sharing. I do think that, you know, there was a movie made Finland? One of those Scandinavian countries where they studied a whole bunch of dental assistants and how they were having fertility problems. And a lot of that was the use of mercury in fillings as well as the radiation from x-rays at dental offices. And all of that has an effect on the body. So the fact that you got that from visiting is bad. And the people who work there and people who work at airports, for example, where they're stepping up the naked body scanning radiation are all being affected, as well as the rest of us, by Wi-Fi radiation, cell phone technology radiation. It's out there. So it's best to take steps to deal with that. What else did he say? Did he isolate, you know, the cause of your illness?
Well, there's nothing much you can do about it. I lost some teeth as a result of that, and there's absolutely nothing you can do. But I refuse to own a cell phone. I will not have a microwave. I'm a Luddite.
Well, ma'am, I got to tell you,
the
Russians wouldn't let their people use microwaves because they said, oh, my God, if we use microwaves, the excessive radiation poisoning will lead to a sickened society that's heavily dependent on big pharmaceuticals later on. And well, that's what the Russians did, but you can see what we did.
Yeah, well, I don't use pharmaceuticals. I use homeopathic.
And I think that's a great idea, ma'am. What I'd recommend for you and anybody else to do is, if you have a condition that you want some information about, one of the things you can do is you can Google that condition.
I don't have a computer, remember?
Well, you can get a friend to then. But the point is that there is information out there if you want to look for something to do about this. You can Google whatever your condition is and naturalnews.com or Mercola, MERCOLA.com, because those are two sites I trust to produce information that can be beneficial.
Okay.
There you go.
And I think people should be far more aware of what they have in their homes.
I completely agree, Carmen. I want to thank you for being a great caller. I apologize. I'd love to have more time, but my time here on air is almost up, so I'm going to say thank you for that warning to your fellow Canadians out there about the dangers of radiation, and perhaps they should look into that and then make an informed decision when they go to a dentist or doctor.
Okay, make which.
Thank you, ma'am. Have a great day.
Okay.
And that was Carmen the caller. I want to thank her for her contribution to this morning's Rude Awakening here on January 10th, 2011. Before I go here and leave it over to Mr. David James, a quick check of the Metro. On the cover, NFL playoffs left no pants, no shame, as dozens of TDC riders are stripping down to their underwear yesterday for the fourth annual No Pants Subway Ride and taking a stand for Transit City, as many activists are pushing for that. Keep in mind, the Transit City thing, the Rob Ford curbing on the bike lanes and caving on the bike lanes and putting curbs in them. This is all part of UN Agenda 21, and there's a video up online called Plannedopolis, about the way the world is supposed to look in 2040, a totally micromanaged planned society where we don't have our independent means of transportation. The government sends cars to pick us up and take us to our predisposed jobs. And this is actually what's being sold by the kids. And there's freedom ghettos in the video, this little cute little animated video with a British accent, you know, where they say these people didn't like all this this planned society stuff where things are so orderly and we don't have to think anymore. And so they're out in the freedom ghettos and they're all sick and they're all crazy. And so this is what's being sold to our kids out there. So we have to get information out on a more regular basis to try and mitigate the effects of some of the propaganda. And so before the People's DJ, Mr. David James, takes you on a four-hour jazz experience you will not forget, I'd like to share some great places for you to do that, great places for you to figure some of this stuff out, and then to figure out how to pass it on, to find your own voice, and to find out what appeals to you, and to find out how well you know people by trying to figure out what could appeal to them. And that includes Infowars.com, NaturalNews.com, Mercola.com, VigilantCitizen.com. It's got a new great article on the Josie and the Pussycats movie from 2001, which actually revealed a lot of Hollywood and music industry brainwashing techniques as sort of an allegory in that movie, either an inside joke or a warning. It's hard to tell. You can also check out VRAN.org for legal vaccine exemption forms and more information on the dangers of vaccines. They are ramping up the flu propaganda right now, so definitely don't get vaccinated. Get an exemption form and get hip to that info. FluorideAlert.org, the CDC, Centers for Disease Control in the United States, just issued a warning on fluoride, saying fluoride is really bad for you, and you got to make sure that, that we lower the doses in water supplies. So we are chipping away at many of these monuments. SeedsOfDeception.com for info on genetically modified foods, and the non-GMO shoppingguide.com for how to avoid them. You can also go to SeedsOfDeception.com to find that out. Locally, TorontoTruthSeekers.com, about 500 members active in the info war in terms of informing each other and figuring out how to inform other people. PressFORTruth.ca, new film on the G20, the Toronto Martial Law G20, coming out called Into the Fire, that should be here soon, courtesy of Dan Dix, Brian Law, and Steve Davies. Patrick White's Conspiracy Culture book and DVD store at conspiracyculture.com, and Victor Fletcher's Toronto Street News paper. And I got to tell you something about you know, out there. Theodore Adorno, one of the fathers of modern music and rock music and pop music, they designed music to get us feeling instead of thinking, so that we would feel. You just feel really bad. You feel the government sucks. You feel that, you know, you want to take it to the man, but you don't necessarily think about how to do that. And that was the design. However, can we take the music we enjoy? Can we take the music that inspires us? Can we take the religious figures that inspire us? Can we take the political figures and activist figures that inspire us and use them to get us in the mood to analyze our culture and to think about it in ways that are more productive? I certainly hope so, and I certainly think so, and that's why I'm here on air Mondays and Thursdays, and I hope you folks do too. I hope you folks get in the mood to handle this. It is a cold January, but as things start heating up and we feel like getting out more, let's get out and let's get active in the info war here in 2011 to make sure the road to 2012 is not a bumpy one. Enough of me, folks. I am out of here. Have a fantastic day. It's cold out there. Take care of yourselves and each other, and peace out.
Time, and now they've got me trying to define in later life how much her love means to me. And it keeps me struggling to remember my first touch of spring. Was there a touch of spring in the air? And did she have a pink dress on? And when she smiled, her shy giant smile. Could you almost touch the warm? Wasn't your first love?